they came back like a few months later and they're like, well, would you want to have like a production company under our umbrella? And I was like, oh, I think I like accidentally played like hard to get and it worked.
He's like, that is not normal.
Hey everyone, I'm Morgan DeBon, a passionate entrepreneur and life advisor. With the Journey Podcast, you'll discover that success isn't about the destination, it's about the journey. I'm sharing stories of amazing people who've taken control of their lives. Join me on my own journey to discover the secret sauce behind reaching success with permission from no one else.
Welcome back to the Journey Podcast. I'm so excited today because we are talking all things being a creative entrepreneur and building an empire. I'm here with the fabulous Phoebe Robinson. You know her, you love her. And if you don't know her and love her, you will by the end of this podcast. Okay. So Phoebe, welcome to the Journey Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me on. I'm really excited to be here. And I do love that. I know people can't see, but the painting in the background is delicious. So
yes. This does go out on YouTube and on Instagram. This painting is from great. Ghana. You can kind of see, you've been to Ghana. So you can see like.
I've never been to Ghana. No, oh, it's on the list.
December, 30th December.
Oh, that's the best time to go.
So much fun. Go for Afro Future, formerly Afrocella. It's so fun. But yes, this is from a market, an amazing artist there. And then this is a family heirloom. So yes, if you are listening to this and you don't know what I'm talking about, go to YouTube and subscribe. Thank you. Anywho, so for those people who aren't familiar, how do you describe yourself? Like, I had my intro for you and I was like, I don't know if this does her justice. Like, you're such a multi-hyphenate. And people want to be a multi-hyphenate so bad, but I feel like you truly embody that essence.
Yeah. And I have to say, not everyone needs to be a multi-hyphenate. Mm. I think that is, I think people place pressure on themselves to be able to do all the things. And because I think, you know, there's so much of like, this person's a genius, that person's a genius because they could do X, Y, and Z. And then it's always like smoke and mirrors when you like really look up close. You're like, oh, they have tons of help. And they're not just like magically creating everything themselves. So that's just a bit of a side. But I guess I would describe myself. I am Cleveland born and raised, but I feel like I'm a New Yorker. I moved here, when I was 17 going on 18. So mm-hmm. I've been here like 22 years.
Wow, yeah, that's a lifetime.
Yeah, so I feel like I'm definitely a New Yorker at this point. You know, I'm a bibliophile. I love comedy. I think I'm a writer first. Like, that is just, if I could only do one thing for the rest of my life, it would be to write. But, you know, I do stand up, I act. Mm-hmm. I'm a TV producer.
Publisher.
I have a book imprint called Tiny Reparations Books. I have a production company called Tiny Reparations. I just love to create and collaborate, and I am a super YouTube fan. So I think that New York Times bestselling author, whatever. Like, I just, I like to create. I like to build worlds. I think, you know, yeah. I just have always been someone who's just loved storytelling, who's loved reading books as a kid. And so I just like to carry on that tradition and then hopefully like help other people be able to do the same.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I mean, you really are living everyone's dream outside looking in. So how does it feel?
Oh, I'm also a runner. I forgot to add that I'm now technically an athlete, not a paid one. Yeah, not a paid one, just as a hobby. I feel like I know, like, you see someone achieve a certain amount of success, you probably think like, oh, they have it made and blah, blah, blah. And this is not to say that my life is not great, because it is. Like, I have wonderful friends and family, but I always feel like, you know, I'm a little bit of a work in progress. You know, I feel like whether it's like professionally or personally, I liken it to like how I approach stand up, where I'm just a scientist in a lab, just constantly tweaking, moving things around, seeing what fits and what doesn't. I think that's a lot of what my life is that I'm just always sort of trying to figure out like what works best, how I can grow as a person. But I will say things are good. I mean, I'm friends with Bono. And if you would have told...
That's pretty cool. I saw that on your Instagram this morning.
Yeah. And if you would have told 13-year-old Phoebe that she would be friends with one of her heroes and on the board of his nonprofit charity, I would be like, What are you talking about? What are you saying?
Get out of here. I love that for you. So let's just walk back for, you know, the podcast is called The Journey. And I try to talk to people about how we got to where we are today. Mm-hmm. What was your first inflection point in your perspective? Like, what was the thing that you feel like started the momentum mm-hmm. to create space for all of these opportunities for you?
That's a your word choice game is really strong. I really appreciate it. Well, I would say probably 2008. I was an executive assistant to the head of Picture House, which was an indie company. It folded, but I believe it's now back. But I was working there, and I think I always secretly wanted to be, you know, a performer. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I just had the courage to admit it to myself. So I was like, oh, I'll just be like a writer producer and I'll work my way up in the film industry and like gain all this experience. Cause I'm very much a person, which I don't even want to make this a generational thing. I think it's just a people thing. People constantly are like trying to find shortcuts to sure. like move around things. I'm always like, but you learn when you do the things. Like me being an assistant has been the greatest asset in terms of my career. So anyway, mm-hmm. I was a executive assistant. I wasn't really loving the job. It was just kind of like, it was a lot of hours. You know, you're like in your 20s, a lot of hours. Yes. You live in New York, you're working overtime, and you're still broke. Right. It's like, where's all my money going? And my good college friend, she was also a writing major at Pratt Institute. She was like, hey, I want to take like a stand-up class. And I was like, what? Like, that sounds so dumb. And she was like, but I don't want to take it by myself. It'd be so fun if we did it together. And I was like, stand-up is, you know, like, listen, I knew about Margaret Cho, Chris Rock, yeah. Wanda Sykes, but I was just like, what is stand-up? This is like, isn't like a real thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it feels like far-fetched over there.
Yeah, I'm just like, that's like not even a real career. Like, what are you doing? And she was like, well, you don't like your job. Let's just go do it. It's at Caroline's, RIP mm-hmm. Caroline's on Broadway. She's like, it's 8 weeks and like, it'll just be fun, distraction while, you know, like you figure out like what you want to do because you don't like your job. And I was like, all right, sure. Like, let's go ahead and do it. Mm-hmm. And the first thing our class did was we saw Daryl Hammond, who used to be on SNL. He did like he headlined at Caroline's. And I was like, oh my God, this is like so fun. Like, you can just see the audience laughing and feeling the energy. You're like, oh, yeah. This is like super cool. And so then our assignment was to like write like 3 minutes of stand up. And we, mm-hmm. Lindsay and I were like, 3 minutes? Like, yeah. We're like, what? We're like, oh my God, that's so much time. Yeah. And so, you know, her and I met up after work and we wrote like our little jokes. Yeah. And then we go to our class. And it's sort of like, you know, it felt like it was like an AA room. It was just like, you know, like a half circle. There were like some donuts in the corner. And there was like a little, you know, mic stand and mic or whatever. And our teacher was Linda Smith, who's a great, great Boston comic, came up with like Dennis Leary and a lot of those mm-hmm. guys, Lenny Clark. And the second I touched the microphone, I was like, I think I'm supposed to be doing this. Like, you know, I just feel like I can be very in tune with like the universe and like what my yeah. God or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so it just was like, you know, I told my jokes and they got like a couple laughs, you know, whatever, it's totally fine. And I was just like, this feels like I'm on to something, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that like really changed the trajectory. So that was July 2008 when we started the class. And then Picture House got shut down in October 2008. And mm-hmm. I was like, that's a sign. I was like, yeah. I think that's a sign that I'm supposed to do this. So I was just doing like open mics and bringer shows where you basically bring people in exchange for, you know, stage time. Mm-hmm. So for instance, if you want to perform at like Gotham Comedy Club, you have to bring like 10 people and you would get like 7 minutes.
I love that.
Yeah. So you would like do all that stuff. I used to bark outside of you know.
You said bark?
Yeah. So that's where you like have like flyers. You'd be like, oh, like Seinfeld might drop in tonight. And Seinfeld's not dropping in tonight. He's not.
You're like the night lady on the street?
Yeah. So you're like, oh, it's going to be a great show. And just be like me and my friends. And it would just be like us, like, you know, basically taking turns doing stand up. And then we'd go to open mics where it's like, you know, you pay like maybe $5. You like buy a soda. You get to like work out like 5 minutes material. So like just all these things where I was just sort of like
doing the work.
Doing the work. And I like just went to a deep dive. And this is back when like Comedy Central used to air stand-up specials all the time. I do not know what happened to that network, but so they would like air like Comedy Central half hours at like, you know, like 1 a.m. I know that I sound old, but I would like set my
I mean, I was a part of the tip to the generation. We remember waking up, staying up and being like, what's all this programming that happens late at night?
So I would like get my DVR and I would like record the sets. And so then I would watch them in the morning as I was getting ready to go to work. Like I would watch all the HBO half hours. So I just really dove in, hung out at clubs. And that I just really feel like that just changed everything. Cause I was just, I like to be a student.
Right.
I also am high achieving. So I like to be proficient at things, but I really love to learn. Cause I just am always like, you never know what things you'll like add to your toolkit. And so I just really dove in.
That resonates with me. I think I was very similar when I started Blavity. I didn't know anything about being an entrepreneur or being a venture-backed founder in Silicon Valley and raising money. And I did the same thing. I hit the pavement. I went to every happy hour in San Francisco. I talked to every Uber driver and Lyft driver who had an app. I took coffee dinners and lunches and just read all the blogs. You know, Y Combinator, which is a huge accelerator, read their blog, TechCrunch, anything I could get my hands on to just understand the world and the vocabulary and just like, in some ways, I was also looking for people of color who were successful, which I didn't find many of them. Like a handful of our generation. And but I think that so often because of social media, people forget that like a lot of the people that we see being successful and like getting to these next levels really spent like time, like grunt hours. Like it's the 10,000 hour rule. It's like you really had to spend time doing it. And I don't know if it feels like this to you, but for me, it feels like people really do want to skip that part right now. Like people are looking and they're comparing and they're like, why is this so, like, how did Phoebe get here? Like, I'm just as funny as her, you know? And it's like, it's a little more than just about being funny.
Yeah. It's definitely like, I think to compare is to despair. And I do that from time to time. So I don't want to act like I'm immune to it. But I do think there is something, if you look at like an Ali Wong, you know, like she has been doing comedy for a long time, longer than I have. And I remember when she used to live in New York and I had this like this crummy little like bar show at Manchester Pub, which is no longer around, but it was like Midtown Manhattan. It was a Monday show during Monday Night Football. And it had a microphone, like a crappy little speaker I got from like PC Richards and Son. Oh my God, so good. And like she would do the show and I like couldn't afford to pay people. So I would pay them in like free chicken wings and
that's what it takes.
Yes. And like you look at her now, she's like having all the success stand-up wise and with beef and everything. Yeah. And it, with her stand-up, it's like she was a comic. Even when I knew her back then, she was getting up every night. She was tweaking her jokes all the time.
That's right.
And so for me to see her have this massive success where she's like selling out theaters and doing, I think she did like a 10-night residency at like Beacon Theater in New York. I'm like, yeah, she's put in the like 15 years to have this. And so I think people, to your point, get very sort of distracted by social media because I think everyone only just posts the highlight reels. They never like post like, you know, the losses. So I think a lot of people just are like, well, I want this to happen overnight for me. And I'm like, there are a handful of people where it's like, you know, they just have magic dust. They have fairy dust sprinkled upon them. And like, you know, you hear about like those actors and actresses who they're just discovered like at a mall, you know, and they're just so captivating. Someone's like, you should act and I'll sign you. And then they like go out for parts and they just like, it works out for them. But that's not 98% of people's experience. 98% is like, you just have to do the work. You have to fall down a lot. You have to have these peaks and valleys. And I always tell people, I'm like, it's really sort of like the process and the work. Cause I'm like the result, it's sort of like, it's here and then it's gone. You know what I mean? You put out an hour of stand-up, people watch it, and then it's like, okay, everyone's like, what next? So it's very much, you can't get so tied to like these sort of like moments of like, I'm going to win an award, or I'm going to have a New York Times bestseller. Like that can't, that's just not going to be as fulfilling as like the going and writing every day, the like, you know, making comedy friends, all of that stuff. And so I really feel like I wish people understood that doing the work and all the stuff, whether it's like studying stand up, like if you want to be a screenwriter, just reading like a lot of scripts, like that is the stuff that's like nourishing and will allow you to be ready for the moment when you do break out. Because we often see people who want XYZ and they get XYZ and they do not have the skill set to handle the moment. And so I always tell people, like, you just want to arm yourself with like knowledge, with ability, with mental fortitude. I think that's also a thing. Like,
mental fortitude is huge.
Yeah. People like want the things. And I'm like, you see it all the time where people come into Hollywood, they get chewed up and spit out because they're
and they not leave. Ready. The turnover of people who move into LA and New York too. Mm-hmm. But I think LA is maybe worse because it's so visual and it's so like external affirmations. At least in New York, some people, like 50% of New York is like, we don't give a shit.
Absolutely.
Right? But in LA, people are like, oh my God, is that so-and-so at the coffee shop? I'm like, Jesus Christ. Like, let those people live. So I completely agree with you. And I guess I'm curious, you know, you said your inflection point, that was really your inflection point for yourself. Mm-hmm. Yes. I'm curious where you think your external career inflection point was, because to go from like having your, whatever your vision of what you thought you were going to do, be a writer, go into film, climb the ladder, do the things, and then say, actually, I'm going to be an artist and a performer and put myself out there. A lot of people then just kind of could stop. Like, you know, you could just do that and like, you're pounding the pavement and you're doing that grind and we may not know you today if that's where you had stopped. So when did you necessarily decide to make an adjustment to get bigger? Like, how did you make that leap? Because I think a lot of people get stuck.
And now a word from our sponsor for today's episode. In the world of social media, connection is everything. Entrepreneurs, content creators, designers, and all types of brands and small businesses need to engage with their audience and share their online identity. A .bio domain is a great way to do that. I love buying domain names because it helps me share with the world new information and have a clear place to manage my links and content. Short, memorable, and professional, your .bio domain name is the best way to share yourself with the world. Right now at porkbun.com/thejourney, you can get a .bio domain name for your link in bio page for a low price, plus tons of freebies like SSL certificates, web and email hosting trials, and more. Now let's take a quick break from our sponsor. When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the right tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. LinkedIn has a vast network of more than a billion professionals, which makes it the best place to hire. It gives you access to professionals you literally can't find anywhere else, and it does all of that while making the process easy and intuitive. I use LinkedIn every single time when I'm hiring candidates for Blavity and for Devon & Co., and I consistently find the top people who are right for our company's roles. Hiring is so much easier when you have that many quality candidates to source from. It's so easy, in fact, that 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. So head over to LinkedIn to post your job for free on linkedin.com/divine. That's linkedin.com/divine to post your job for free. Terms and conditions, of course, apply. Thanks, LinkedIn.
Yeah, I think I was just sort of, and I think I'm always kind of like this, where I'm just like, okay, I know I want X, Y, Z. I'm not sure how I will get there, but I will just sort of show up every day and do the work and the path will sort of reveal itself. Mm. And so, you know, 2008, when I started doing stand-up and then really like sort of, I was just, you know, another New York comedian just getting up, you know, doing biker bar shows in Staten Island, taking the $1 bus to Boston to sleep on comics couches and do, you know, shows where I don't make any money. But I think really sort of like this sort of like external moment was probably when Jessica Williams and I sold Two Dope Queens to HBO because we were doing it and the podcast. And I was like, Jessica, I feel like we could get this on HBO. And this was probably like,
but like, what a thing to say. I feel like we should go on TV.
Yeah. Well, because like when the podcast came out April, 2016, it just really like took off. Like it would like was number one on like the podcast charts on iTunes. It just right. really
did well.
I don't. Yeah. And I was just like, you know, the show just felt so good and fun. And it was just great. Cause we, you know, we're having people like Bowen Yang and Michelle mm-hmm. Buteau and mm-hmm. Shang Wang and just all these like really awesome people good on. People. And I was just like, I love variety shows. So I would think about like, you know, like Comic Relief or like whatever. And I was like, I haven't really seen like a variety kind of show like this on TV in a minute. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, I think we could like get an HBO. And she's like, yeah, I feel that way too. And so we, you know, we invited them out. We invited execs out from other networks and they just completely got what we were trying to do. We want it. We don't want you to change anything. We just want to help support your mm-hmm. vision. And it was really nice to just have a network sort of get that. And so, you know, when we got on like HBO, that got the attention of ABC and they wanted me to do this pilot. And I liked the script. It wasn't a perfect fit for me. And they also wouldn't let me come on as an EP. And I just think as someone who's a writer and a creator, like I want to also be, you know, be contributing like to able that. To help yeah. like shape it a little bit.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I think there are better people for this part than me. So I was like, I'll just like bow out and I'll just, you know, this was 2019 and they came back like a few months later and they're like, well, would you want to have like a production company under our umbrella? And I was like, oh, I think I like accidentally played like hard to get and it worked.
He's like, that is not normal.
Yeah. I was like, oh, I should do that in dating and see what happens for me.
I'm good.
And so that just really changed everything was doing that special. Cause I think, you know, obviously Jessica was the more well-known person because of the Daily Show and she had started doing some indie movies, you know, they were like premiering at Sundance. And so I was like really kind of the more unknown person because up until that point, I was just not just, but I was mainly, you know, a New York stand-up comic and a freelance writer. And so I just wasn't known on a bigger level. Mm. And so I think once people got to see the visual of me and see me be funny and be dorky and all those things, I think people were able to put it more together that I could, you know, have a place in this industry.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. Like what I heard you just say is you started off, then you got an opportunity because you put yourself out there and you invited people, which is like audacious, right? Like, I mean, how many people have the thought of like, let me go just like get people's information and get my network and invite these executives and then they show up. Okay. Then they show up and then they love it. And then you get this deal and now you're on HBO and now you're in everyone's house. Right. And so we all see you and we're like, oh my God, you and Jessica are so cute, so funny, so interesting. And there wasn't a lot of you. Like there were people, there was like Issa and some people on like YouTube, but not people hadn't made the jump yet. Like HBO hadn't become like very black.
Yeah.
Like Stars wasn't very black. Like, you know, like it was not normal at the time to see that kind of content on HBO. And then more opportunities came and you took advantage of that. Tell me, at what point did you decide to hire a team? And when you started to explain who you were to the audience, you didn't say entrepreneur and business owner, but you really are. And so I'm curious, at what point did you decide to like hire a team and really start to formalize the foundation for your empire?
Yeah, I mean, my first assistant, I believe she started 2018. Her name is Mai, and she's fantastic. So it was just her and I against the world and like just a scrappy little duo. And then, you know, as I started building out the production company, then I hired like a head of development. And so then I want to say around like 2018, maybe I got a publicist and, you know. So along the way, it's like you start out with like getting a manager and then you get an agent and then you have a lawyer and you have all these things. And so you're sort of slowly building a team. And that's been very fun for me just because I really like to work with other people. And
yeah.
So now I still have the same agents that I signed with. This had to be like 2016 or 17. Mm-hmm. They're amazing. Tim, Heidi, Ali. And, you know, I think as a business owner, what I've learned, it's been like a journey, like for sure, because I think, you know, it's one thing to be a creative and I'm like, oh, I'm just writing and blah, blah, blah. And like, that's one thing, but like really running a business and overseeing employees and making mistakes and having good quarters, having not so good quarters and, yeah. you know, managing expectations, all that stuff. Are things that no one's really taught. You're just like,
just kind of have to brute force it.
Yeah. You're like, oh, I want to be a boss. I want to be this. But then it's just like, part of that is like looking at the best dental plans for your company. It's like, I do not give a fuck. Why am I reading this document? Yeah.
that's a major switch. When you go from like, everybody's a 1099 contractor and you're not really thinking about compliance to like, oh, we have like benefits and policies and mat leave and like things.
Yeah.
It is a huge jump.
It's a huge jump. And it's, you know, I've talked about this with my therapist. I'm like, I consider myself a small business owner. Like I have a team. Yeah. It's four of us. You know what I mean? Right. Like I have my assistant, my head of development, and then like my chief operating officer. And that's it. You know what I mean? Yeah. I think, you know, people see like, oh, she's had like New York Times bestselling books and
right.
You There's know, she said TV shows, like, mm-hmm. oh, she's just like thriving and coasting and chilling. I'm like, dude, I'm in the trenches every day, you yeah. know, because it's my name on the door.
That's right.
And so I think being a small business owner, what I like about it is that you learn how to get good at so many different things
mm-hmm.
and you learn to have sort of like that personal responsibility. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Where I think sometimes when you, especially like I've had jobs where it's like, this is mine. I mean, it's whatever. I don't care. I'm going to do my job, but I'm not like, I'm not mentally engaged or challenged right. enough. And when you're an entrepreneur, you're a small business owner, you're engaged every single day. You just can't right. help but be that. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I've really grown a lot as a business owner. I think especially in terms of tough decisions. I think I've always mm-hmm. struggled with that because I'm like, I always want everything to be, you know, I'm a Libra. So you want everything, you want everyone to feel good, everything to yeah. be like even and nice and chill. And I had to get to a place where it's like, oh, no, you got to be able to make decisions that like are going to benefit your company.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an interesting adjustment. And I think when you're creative and you are making things put out into the world, and then all of a sudden you're a business owner and an entrepreneur where like the buck has to stop with you and you're responsible for other people's lives. You're responsible for their rent, their kids' dental plan, and if their kids get braces or not. And the challenge I think that I've heard from so many creatives is that it can feel draining to the point where how do you find space and time to be in your essence?
Yes.
And do you have like rituals? Like, do you take like Fridays off so you can create? Do you do like once a month you go on vacations? Like, how do you incorporate your rituals so that you have space to be in your creative brain?
Yeah, usually my calendar will block out, you know, I use this app called Pomodoro where it's like you focus for like 25 minutes, break for five, blah, blah, blah. You repeat that. So I usually will block out time in my calendar for either, you know, script writing or stand-up writing. That helps a lot too. But yeah, there are days where it's like, I don't want to be in any more meetings. I need to just be over here creating. And so, you know, it's just, it's always a balance. There are days where it's like frustrating, where you're like, you just have to do like admin stuff. So it's like, well, this is just not going to be a day where I create. I just got to keep the lights on. So I think I used to like struggle with the balance of that in the past. And I think now I'm very much like, yeah, if I need to write today, like that's just what's happening. Because I used to be always like, oh, well, I'll just move this for this. Or I was very notorious for like, I would build in time off. And then of course, some opportunity would come up and I'm like, oh, well, I'll just do the work opportunity. And so then I would just burn myself out. And so now I'm just like, if it's in the calendar, it's in the fucking calendar. Mm-hmm. So it's like, unless, you know, like LeBron James is calling to hang out for brunch, I'm writing this day.
I'm doing that.
Yeah. But it is hard because it's like, again, when you have employees, you also have to tend to them. Like you can't silo yourself off because then they're going to feel disconnected and they're going to be like, well, what's this about? So you have to check in every day. You have to make sure they feel seen and heard and they're enjoying themselves and they're having a good time. So it is a tough balance. I think I'm getting better at it. As I have sort of proven myself in this industry, I think it's allowed me to not have to do as many things at once, you know, because before I was like, I got to have a podcasting and this thing and that thing and this, because I don't know what's going to take off. And this year, I feel like it's kind of the first year where it's like, it's very much a writing heavy year for me. I'm working on a TV pilot script and writing a new hour stand up. I have an idea for a romantic comedy, so I'm going to start working on that this summer. You know what I mean? So it's like I'm able to take that breath, but it took a long time to get there. And I'm still always trying to make sure I'm not just, as someone who's a writer, it's very easy for you to just be by yourself. It's like it's
in the great forest. Just
exactly. But it's like your employees are like, knock, knock, bitch, come out the forest, you know?
I know that's right. All day, every day. My employee's like, are you working? I'm like, no, I'm not working. yes, I am. Hello, what do you need? What advice would you give to the creative who's listening who feels like it's time for them to hire a team? That they're like soloing it, like maybe they're making six figures, so they've like quit their job, they're like full-time creative, but they're solopreneur for the most part, and the idea of like hiring someone feels intimidating. What advice would you give them?
Yeah, I feel like when I hired, I was sort of at that point where I was getting very stretched thin, and I was, it's like sort of where you're like between levels, you know what I mean? You're like, you're here and then you're trying to get to the next level and you're like right here. And I was just like, you know, emails are slipping through the cracks and, you know, I just feel like I'm just stretched too thin. And I was like, I think this might be the point where I should hire an assistant. And I would tell people, like, it is scary at first to be like, oh, I'm going to hire someone and I'm going to have to pay them. And it's like, you know, it's predicated on how I do, because it's like, you know, if you just have like a 9-to-5 job, it's like no one else's livelihood is on the line based on your performance.
Yes.
So that is something I had to adjust to. And I was like, for me, it felt like hiring an assistant was investing in myself. And so I think that's how I was able to make it less of an anxious decision and less of something that was like filled with like concern and more of like, no, I'm slowly building out my business and this is the first step. And this means that if I can afford an assistant, I must be doing something right.
Yeah.
So I just got to keep going down that path. But it's, I would say just like, you know, sit down and write out sort of the things that are going well in your career, your business, and then write down the things that could be improved upon. And if it all sort of kind of seems like, yeah, you're trying to do everything. And so guess what? You're not doing everything well.
Right.
It's probably time to bring someone on. And, you know, I think by doing that, it also teaches you to not feel like you have to do everything yourself. Because I think a lot of small business owners, like that's the mentality, is like, it's all on me. And I got to just like handle business myself. And when you branch out, you have employees and they could take like that burden off. It's so rewarding and it frees you up so much to really focus on the reason why you started your business, you know, which is to like refocus on that passion, you know? And so I would say do a gut check, write out where you want to be in a few years and write out why you're scared to make this next step. And then if you're just like, oh, you look at it and you're like, okay, well, I wrote all that stuff down. So it's not in my head anymore.
Right.
And it's like the worst thing that could happen is I hire someone and it doesn't work out. It doesn't really seem as scary anymore, you know?
That's right. You've done the hard part. You've created your business, taking the leap to believe in yourself and your vision. But if you want to make money doing what you love, you need to grow. And to do that, you need a marketing strategy. There's a recent episode of a great podcast called This is Small Business that talks all about marketing strategies. In this episode, you'll learn how to identify your target customer, where to find them, and which marketing channels to focus on so you're making the most of your budget, and how to use data to set goals. This is Small Business, an original podcast from Amazon, answers so many of these questions. Whether you're dreaming of starting your business, looking to take a side hustle full time, or maybe you're a few years in and you're ready to scale, this show covers it all. Coming up this month on the show, you'll learn how to grow your email list from Jenna Kutcher, and you'll get a step-by-step guide for accelerating your business growth with my favorite, Amy Porterfield. Make sure to follow This Is Small Business on Apple Podcasts or Spotify so you don't miss those fantastic episodes. And big thanks to This Is Small Business for sponsoring the Journey podcast by Morgan DeBond.
It's giving what we do in therapy.
Yeah. What's
the worst case scenario?
Yeah, because you build it up in your mind. Yeah, because you build it up in your mind. You're like, oh my God. And then when you're like, oh, this is it? Like, it's not that big of a deal.
Yes. Literally, this is why everybody should go to therapy, because you just learn ways to trick your brain to taking action or not take action, depending on what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I feel like it's so helpful just to get the mental exercises mm-hmm. when you're trying to move to a next level. I'm thinking sometimes when I do these podcasts, I always think about, well, someone who's listening in who's like annoyed with me because I didn't ask the question. Do you ever think about that?
Yeah.
Weird to think, like, they're like, oh, well, why didn't you follow up on this, Morgan? And I'm curious for you, as you approach this next phase, like, how do you prioritize your, not retirement, but how do you prioritize when, like, you hit your threshold of enough? Mm. And how are you thinking about making that transition? Or are you thinking about, like, what that transition looks like for you?
Yeah, I think for me, I think I'm going to be a person who's always going to keep working. Like, I just mm-hmm. like to work. I like to create. So I'm like, I feel like I'm going to be on my Betty White, my Norma Lear. You know what I mean?
Yeah, just yeah.
out here having fun. But I think I definitely have shifted priorities in my life. And, you know, mm-hmm. I was such a workaholic, but that was like the number one priority. And I was missing like weddings, baby showers. I wouldn't go home to like visit family as much and all those things. And so now it's like, I take time out for friends and family and, you know, take solo trips so I can sort of like rejuvenate,
mm-hmm.
which I think will allow me to want to be in this industry for a really long time. Because yeah. I think when you're so used to like, oh, if I don't say yes, this opportunity is going to go away.
Right.
Then you get to a point where you're like, I don't want to do this anymore. This is just not fun. You sort of lose like why you're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're just like, I'm just working, well, then what's the point if you're not going to enjoy, you know, the fruits of your labor? So I think now I'm in a place where I enjoy the work, but I also want to enjoy a little bit of life.
Yeah.
I'm not really thinking about retiring. I think, you know, as I get older, I definitely want to probably like really see if I can make this imprint, like be something really huge. Like I really like that it's, you know, we're 3 years old and we're really.
And it's with HarperCollins.
Oh, no. Penguin. Yeah. And so we, you know, we're starting to build like our author retention, which is really great.
What does that mean?
So it's like, you know, we have Grace D. Lee. She wrote Portrait of a Thief and now she's writing another book for us.
Got it.
And then we have another author, Latoya Watkins. She wrote two books for us and she's coming back to write two more books for us. And that's like really important for me, for authors to feel like this isn't a one and done, that I'm really mm-hmm. going to be there on the journey with them.
Yeah.
And so I definitely would like to lean more into that. And yeah, I don't know. I just really love what I do. And so I just don't envision myself, you know, peacing out. Like I really just feel like I'll just find different ways to keep going. Although I feel like stand up, I don't think I'll be doing that forever. Cause it's really just, it's a grind. Like just being on the road is a lot. And so
it's boring.
Yeah. So I don't imagine like doing that in my, like, I don't think I'll be like a Dick Gregory and still be
doing stand-up. Like literally.
Yeah.
Working.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I see like that generation still out and about. I'm like, y'all been working.
I know.
I do not aspire to work like that. No. What advice would you give to creative writers who are looking to get published?
I would say, I know this sounds like really obvious, you're like, duh, but the first step is really like writing. Like I met a lot of people who are like, oh yeah, I want to write. And then you ask them like, okay, send me a sample. They don't have one. So it's like, babe, what are we talking about?
You want to be a thing, but not actually do the work. Yeah. I say that a lot though. I say that with entrepreneurs. They're like, yeah, so like I want to start a business and da 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 da. And I'm like, okay, but just like do it. Like, what? Yes. Why are we talking about this?
Yes. And so my thing, like when I started, I used to do recaps for Scandal. I had my own little blog that I was writing, I think 4 times a week. Like I was just, long before anyone ever paid me or sold a book, I was just writing regularly, and I knew I wanted to do essay collections. So with my blog, I would just like sit and I would write and blah, blah, blah. And like, so when I did get my book deal in 2015, I was able to be like, okay, yeah, I mean, I've been writing. So like, I can handle this moment. And, you know, when I met with my lit agent, Robert Gensler, who I'm still with to this day, and he was just like, here's some sample, you know, book proposals, go off and write one. And I just like read and I studied them. And I just was like writing and rewriting it and rewriting it. And I just was really, again, a student. Like I was like, well, if I want this thing, like this next level, I'm going from blogging to writing books. Like I got to study all these books. And so when I wanted to write essay collection, I think I read something like 30 essay collections, you know, like I read like Shonda Rhimes' book, Roxane Gay, I read Girl Boss, I just read like any sort of essay collection, like David Sedaris, just to sort of like see like, okay, these are sort of the common themes, or like this is sort of like, oh, this person did this, this is really cool, this person did that, that's awesome. And so I really just became consumed by it, and so that is a huge part of it. I think also studying the industry and noticing like what trends are happening, I think is very important. It doesn't need to inform your work. You can write whatever you want, but it is always good to see like, oh, this is what the industry is like sort of buying a lot of right now.
You have a very data-driven approach, and I talk about data like a lot. Like mm-hmm. what you just said is very much you took an inventory of everything that was out there. You said, I like this stuff. I don't like this stuff. This is the patterns that I'm seeing. And then you said, okay, now I have at least like a mental framework or outline on how to approach the thing.
Yeah.
And I'm finishing up my book, which comes out later this year. It's been such a process.
Yeah.
But similar to you, I've been writing newsletters weekly for many, many years, like 4 years, something great, like so long that the folder is just huge. So I could just pull all the things, you know? Yeah. And then when I was looking at titling the book, I asked my editor, I said, well, can you send me a spreadsheet of all of the top performing books mm-hmm. in these two categories? Send me their titles, how much they did, how many books they sold, et cetera. And then I ran it through AI like a crazy lady and said, tell me the trends that you see from this data. And it was so fascinating, like the keywords in the titles, the colors of the book covers, like how many trends there are. But to your point, it was about being a student. It was like, okay, some of the stuff is, of course, people are really, really good at what they do and the book is fantastic. And like, that's why it's a perennial seller. But some of it is also like, they know how to play the game.
Yeah.
You know, they know what the people like.
Yeah. And it's just about being ready for I think people always are thinking about the moment and not thinking about if they're going to be ready for it.
Mm.
You know what I mean? It doesn't mean that you're going to have, I mean, I don't think there's any situation where you're going to go into and you're like, I have 100% of all the information. I'm going to be like, it's not about that, but it's about like, if you're doing the work of like doing the data stuff, if you're writing the newsletters for, you know, 4 years, when you sit down to write a book, you're not going to be like, well, how do I write? I got this deal. How do I write a book? It's going to be more like, oh, I got to revise this essay again. There's all those moments where you're like,
I fluff out this story. I'm like, how many more details?
Yes.
I don't remember what I was wearing.
I know. And your editor knows you're going to have an attitude with them, but they're ultimately like, right. Yeah.
Where were you when you came up with this framework? I'm like, I don't know. I don't remember where I was.
Yeah, but I think that like for me, I'm always like, I never want to go into this. And I think a lot of this just comes from the fact that, you know, as a woman of color, you're very much like, you know, you have to be on point. You have to know your ish inside out, because when you're walking into rooms, a lot of times there are going to be people thinking you don't know what the fuck you're doing or you don't belong here. So I think that over preparedness sort of, you know, comes from that, and also that my parents have a strong work ethic.
Mm-hmm.
I just always tell people, I'm like, the only thing you can control is what you bring to a situation. Like mm-hmm. you can't control if someone's going to buy your book. You can't control if like someone's going to want to represent you. You can't control if your TV show becomes a big hit, but guess what? You can control if you do the best writing job. Yes. You can control whether you know how to be a producer and know how to run a set. Like, those are things that you can control. Absolutely. And they're not always the sexy things. Of course they're not. Like, you know, being like number one on the call sheet for everything's trash. I think people are just like, oh, it's just like fun. You go to glam and blah, 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 and like whatever. And yes, there are those fun moments in hair and makeup, but it's like you're in the chair learning your lines. Usually myself and my showrunner, Jonathan Groff, not the actor, but the other Jonathan Groff, like we would be rewriting scenes because we'd be like, oh, this scene's too long. Mm-hmm. We could cut this in. In real time. I'm like, those are the things that you want to be prepared for. And if you're taking shortcuts or if you don't want to be a student of the thing that you want to do, to me, that makes me question whether you really want to do the thing or do you just want the results from that? Like, if you want to be successful, do you want to be famous, you want to have a lot of money, you could find some other career that's not the creative.
You can try. This one's not the right one. And I would even argue, like, sometimes people want to have the title and be known for the thing more than they want to put in the being a student of that trade and have a trade craft that they're excellent at, you know? Yeah. And I mean, I think anyone listening to this podcast probably is already in the learning journey. Like, they already love information. So I'm probably preaching to the choir a little bit.
No, and then just constantly like learning. Like right now, I'm like calling this like my film school year, and I'm just like trying to watch as many movies as I can this year, just because, you know, like I wrote like a screenplay, but it was like in college, so I haven't like really written a movie since then. So I'm just like, you know, sort of like, oh, I'm noticing like things that Scorsese does, and I love Martin Scorsese, so like I watch all his movies, but now I'm like watching with the eye towards of like, what can I learn from all these things? Or I just watched Celine Song's Past Lives last night, which I think is a really good indie movie. And so it's just like, you know, I've been in this industry for a long time, but I'm like, there's always more that I can learn. And so like, I'm taking this opportunity to be like, okay, I'm going to try and learn as much as I can about film in this way and help that inform my screenwriting process later on this year. So it's the learning never stops. So
Being on the journey of always being a novice in something is like, for me, gives me a lot of energy.
Yeah.
Same. I love it. Okay. Last question. What books, like fundamental skills books or like fundamental, like history of, you know, type of books would you give to a creative who wants to be on the same type of career path that you are? Someone who gets paid to be themselves, is paid for their ideas and gets to live this life of a like fully encompassed creative.
Yeah, I'm right now I'm actually reading Rick Rubin's book. I think it's called A Creative Act. He's at
That's amazing. A top seller right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really good. It's one of those like you're not gonna breeze through. It's more like you read like, you know, 20 pages and you let it like sit with you and then you go back to it. But I think it's really smart, but also the EQ is also really high in that book. And what I really like about it is I think so often when you turn your passion into a business, you can lose the things that make you the most creative and make you sort of so focused on being results oriented, on having a good quarter, on doing whatever. And it's just sort of like you're not working or creating in a pressurized environment when a lot of times the best stuff that's created is without pressure. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's by being free and not like sort of like judging yourself or it's just sort of like being in the moment. So I really like that book a lot. Brené Brown's all I think is good for that.
She's great. Yeah.
Cause again, I think she's also a data person too. There's a lot of where you're like, I think I identify with that sort of creative aspect of it. And then I think a lot of times I just like, I really liked Shonda Rhimes' book because I thought, the Year of Yes. Yeah, I think that's, I don't live by a Year of Yes, I think. But just in general, like I'm very much a person. And I think that's because I started out doing improv at college where it's very much fundamentally yes and. It's not about saying no. It's about building. And so I think I'm very much creatively a person who will be like, all right, let's see if we can make this happen. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes people will be like, no. And it's like, but what if it's a yes? What if we try?
How can we get to yes here?
Yeah. And yeah. Sometimes it's like, you know, it doesn't work out. And when it doesn't work out, you sort of always learn something. So it's worth it anyway. And then if it does work out, great. But I really do think that how can I explain this? Okay. So my niece and nephew, mm-hmm. my niece is 9, my nephew's 5. Mm-hmm. My niece Olivia, she is very bold and outgoing, really into science. Mm. Kind of fearless in a way, learning the guitar right now. She's just very much kind of like, I'm going to just like go for it. Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know society will try to beat that out of her because that's what society does. They like to beat that out of people. Mm-hmm. And so I'm always of the mindset of like, how can we get back to the place before we felt shame for being ourselves? You know what I mean?
Yeah. That child energy.
Yeah, because I think that's so important, not only just for creating, but just for like living. You know, yeah. I feel like we easily box ourselves in. We're like, oh, we shouldn't do this and we shouldn't do that. And well, that's just like it's just a hobby. So like, what's the point? Like, I definitely feel like that's a very American thing where it's like, if you're not going to be super proficient at anything,
don't do it.
Then why are you doing it? Yeah. And you're like, well, I'm doing it because it's like, I enjoy it. Like, you know, like I'm never going to be the fastest runner. Like, that's not the point. Like, I'm doing the Boston Marathon for charity. Like, I'm not trying to qualify for these things based on time. It's just like, if there's pleasure I'm getting from running, and that's enough. And so I wish that we could all get back to a place. And I think creatively and as an entrepreneur, like if you can remember the pleasure you derive from the thing, when the stakes were low, when the stakes get high, I think that will sort of keep you from floating away. It will anchor you in a way. Yeah.
I believe that. I believe that 100%. And I think that having things that you do for you, for me, that's painting. You know, people are always like, are you going to sell your paintings? I'm like, no, I don't want to. Like, I'll give you a painting. I'd rather give you a painting than sell it.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe my second life when I'm 60 years old, then I'm like, all right, let's do it. But for now, it's an outlet, you know, it's an outlet for space and thought and feelings and just like, it's a creative outlet. So I really do hope that people who are listening and like reconsider what their creative outlets are, and not everything has to be for distribution.
Yes. Not everything
has to be built to sell. Like, it's okay to just do something.
Yeah. And that's the one thing I dislike about social media, because everyone's trying to monetize everything right now where it's like, oh, I love to cook, so then I'm going to start a cooking channel, or I love to. And it's like, just do something because you like it. That's it.
Yeah. Invite people over for dinner and you don't have to take a picture.
Yes. You could just like hang out and have memories and do a snapshot in your mind. And that's like it. And yeah, I wanted to get back to that, because I think with social media and all this other stuff where it's like, there's this thing. Who wrote, was it New York Times, Washington Post? I can't remember. But now there's like bookshelf wealth.
Oh, I saw that. Yes. With like bookshelf porn, where people have like these aesthetic bookshelves.
Yeah.
And like, how did we get here?
And I get it, because I like to code everything. But like, if you walk into my apartment, I'm like the old, like they're starting to be just stacks on chairs. I'm like, that's the reality. That's what
that's
it is.
That's your essence.
Yes.
That's
your essence. I am the book stacks on chairs, girl. I'm like, you can't sit here. You can't sit here, because these are all the books I need to read. Like, it's just, you could just collect books and it doesn't need to be like a thing.
Yeah, I know. I mean, we could just keep going on and on, but
yeah,
because I really can. Don't get me started.
This has been so fun. I want to keep talking.
No, so fun. I feel like hopefully those of you who are listening in feel a little bit more free, and that you feel a little bit more empowered to just do you. And for the creatives who are struggling with that transition between how do you become an entity with your creativity, but also create space for your creativity, I hope this episode was inspiring to you. And like, just do the volumes of work that it takes with joy. Yes. Because it's what you love to do. It's a privilege, you know? And Phoebe, thank you so much for sharing some of that with us today.
Thanks for having me, Morgan. This has been awesome. And everyone listening, like, just like stick with it. There have been so many times where I've doubted myself and I'm just like, you have to just like overcome those moments, because I really do think like ultimately you'll be rewarded. Did you see that happen? Oh my God. Why is it doing that?
We knew we had that. Now I have to go figure that out.
I don't know how I did that. That was very... Wait, can I do it again? What is going on?
I must have some sort of AI filter. So I know.
But anyway, everyone, just keep following your dreams. And when it gets hard, just keep plugging along, because I do really think people who stick it out get rewarded. You just do.
Amen.
Yeah.
Amen.
Thanks for listening to the Journey Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you leave a review and head to our Instagram and YouTube to leave a comment. I look forward to hearing how this podcast has made an impact on your own journey.